No, no, no. She's not a medical doctor, but she can sure cure your tax problems or your financial woes. She's the how-to girl. It's the Dr. Friday Show. If you have a question for Dr. Friday, call her now, 737-WWTN. That's 737-9986. So here's your host, financial counselor and tax consultant, Dr. Friday.
G'day, I'm Dr. Friday, and the doctor is in the house on this very rainy day. And if you want to join the show, you can at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. Taking your calls, talking about my favorite subject, taxes. And right now we're in the midst of finishing up the 2023 tax returns. They are due October 15th if you filed an extension. If you are not on extension, you're late. So probably makes no difference. But if you are on extension, you do need to file that return so you don't get failure to file on time penalties. It does not extend the money. After all these years, it seems like I've said this a lot, but you need to realize it doesn't extend the money that you owe. If you owe money and when you file in October, that money is going to have to be something that you should have paid back in April or even made quarterlies throughout the time to do what you needed to do. So it's not something that you can just, you know, just say, hey, I mean, everybody would extend it to October 15th if we didn't have to pay. I mean, everyone would wait to the very last minute to make that payment. So obviously that's not the case. So I just want to make sure everyone understands that the situation is if you're going to owe money to the IRS, you should have paid it already. And it should have been paid obviously by April 15th thereabouts, or even estimates quarterlies throughout the year. We're just about through, well, we've already had our third quarterly, so we only have one left for the year of 2024. And if you're filing your taxes right now in October, then you basically haven't made, and if you haven't just went ahead and at least estimated based on the prior year to the best of your ability, you're now three payments behind on the current year. So not having, you haven't actually paid your 2023 yet, possibly all of it. You also waited until that return was completed to make your quarterlies, and you should have been making them in April, June, September, and now January will be the last one. So you need to catch all those up as well. It's not just, well, if I have it, I can do it or whatever. It is a mandate as far as I'm concerned. There are penalties that are assessed if you do not file quarterly estimates for anyone that owes money or has owed money in the past. So let's say you filed your 2022 taxes, and if you waited till October, whatever, and you owed $5,000. That means it automatically says that you are going to need to make quarterly estimates for 2023, right? Because you owe $5,000, you're supposed to be paying this as you go, not wait till the end of the year and then make the payment, even if you paid it in full. There would have been a sweet little love letter that you would have received that said, failure to make timely estimated payments. Now, if it was your first year and that's the first time it happened, you may not have received it. But if you're a person that every year you file, every year you owe, then the quarterlies are there. Even if you're a W-2, we always assume that quarterlies really only has to do with the self-employed. That's not true. I have many people that are retired that have to do quarterly estimates. Now, if we do it right, we can have the money coming out of their retirements in different ways so they don't physically have to make those estimated payments, because it can be a real pain in your derriere. But one way or the other, you do need to make sure that you're paying in this money and not waiting until October of the following year to make those payments. You are giving the IRS penalties and interest, and that's just the way it is, right? I mean, it is the way it is. So if you haven't done it, you know, I'm all about, let's try to pay as little amount of penalties and or interest than we can. I just don't want to give the money if I don't have to. All right. So if you've got questions, maybe you've got a situation where maybe you've got something that's maybe a one-time situation, or you've inherited something, or you're selling something, then you might want to be able to see how that's going to work. And you can do that. You can call here, 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. Let's go to the phones and hit Mark and see if he can add. Hey, Mark, what can I do for you?
Hey, Dr. Friday, I look forward to hearing your show every week. Got a question. Wife and I filing jointly, always had a small business on the side, Schedule C kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now she has her own little business on the side. Would it be better for us to be married separately and she does hers and then I do mine? Or will they take two side businesses on a married joint 1040?
That's actually a great question. I don't think I've ever been asked that, Mark. And it's a good question because, you know, you don't think about it. The answer is yes, you can stay as married. And in most cases, and again, I don't know your personal tax situation, and it depends on how much money you're each making, if there's any kind of marriage penalty. But married filing separately is going to have more penalty than married filing jointly. So bottom line is it's most likely still going to be better. But that being said, I would, and I do this all the time for my clients that are both self-employed, I calculate the tax to the best of my ability to be able to say, this is how much Mark would owe, and this is how much the spouse would owe. So you're each making sure you're paying in based on your own business. Your business is a success when you're paying your taxes along with everything else, right? So you don't want, it's all maybe the family money when it's all said and done, but it's still good for a business to carry its own weight. So I think at least. So at least that way you both can actually pay in your own quarterlies. You can pay them under your own Social Security numbers. Then it would all merge together at the end of the year and you'd be good to be able to do the other side of it. But yes, I would still most likely, again, you might want to, if you want a free consult or whatever, we may just want to look at your numbers to make sure. But under most circumstances, married filing jointly is still a better package than married filing separately.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate that, Mark. All right, really quick, let's hit Killy and see if I can help. Hey, Kill.
Hey, Dr. Friday. How are you?
I am doing awesome. How about yourself?
Hey, great. Just got off of work. I'm long alive. I enjoy the show. I have a quick question.
Sure.
I'm building a shop at my residential, at my home, and I'm using a local company, and I was going to borrow $40,000 from my daddy, and he was just going to write me a check, and I was going to deposit it into my bank account. And so I got to thinking, well, I don't know if that's a good idea to deposit that much money. I mean, I didn't really know what what are your thoughts? Yeah. I mean, what should I do? Should I do that, or is that?
I don't think
I
have
to
worry about it. It's not like you're taking $40,000 in cash, because when you hear about issues, the bank may have some questions. If someone walked in with $40,000 cash and say, "Well, where did you get the money? Who gave it to you?" Under the money laundering laws, but with a check, there's no problem. He's got a bank account number. You've got one. They know who it is. And you can either consider, daddy can consider it a gift, a loan. It doesn't make a difference. That's between you and him. There's no tax on that $40,000, at least not from your standpoint. And there's none from your father's as long as he's already paid tax on it. So it's really outside the tax code, but there's no issue with you putting that money in the bank and then using it. The biggest question would be is how you depreciate the building when the time comes. Because obviously it's a work building, but it's also on your primary property, which we have some exclusions. So we just have to figure out what's going to be. You may have some recapture of depreciation when you sell the house, and that may be years from now, but the building definitely needs to be added to your Schedule C or E or D or whatever you're filing your business under.
Okay. Well, I was just under the impression that, like, if I deposited over $10,000, I had to report it to the IRS and all that stuff.
Only if it's cash, just so you know.
Okay.
So if it's a check, they already got your daddy's information, okay?
Oh, okay, great. Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. Have a good day.
You too. All right. So those were awesome questions, actually. And if you have those kind of questions, that's the easiest way to do it. And I can't tell you how many times people have asked, especially about, we all know if we put $10,000 in a bank, they're going to say, who's it from or whatever. We don't always understand how that exactly works. And with new businesses, of course, we have the Business Ownership Information Act that came out, where if you own a business, basically the simplest way is any business owner that is an LLC, a corporation, a partnership, anything registered with the state, you need to now register it with the foreign banking, which is also the same people that deal with banking laws as far as money laundering. And they're just trying to find out. From my understanding, I'm being a couple different calls because I'm like, why do we need to upload people's driver's licenses onto a website where the government already has a lot of this information? And we're being told that basically it's all coming down to, again, it's money laundering laws as well as foreign investors. They're trying to basically be able to figure out what the foreign investors are, where they're going, and you know what that's going to mean to people. So again, don't forget, if you have a business and you've been in business for years, you have to do this. If you've just started the business in the last 60 days, you have to do this. There are some exclusions if you're into the insurance or different regulations, but you know, for most of us, they're just ordinary businesses. We're required by this new law to do this. And the worst is, and I haven't seen any yet because the deadline hasn't happened, but the paperwork that they're putting out is saying, if you don't comply with this Business Owners Information Act, that they're going to charge you $500 a day penalty for not doing it. So it's one of those deals where a lot of people are like, what? You know, I don't know anything about it. How do I do it? You can pretty much Google Business Information Act or Business Owners Information Act, and you can find out there's a website that has to go in there. But it is something that if you run a business, not a sole proprietorship, those are not required, but if you run a single member LLC, any of the others, most of those are coming out as we do need to file this information. So I'm just putting it out there so you make sure, you know, you don't just kind of let it go by and you might be, I've been in business for 50 years. I don't need to do this. Yes, you do. All of us have to do it. If it's an entity type, if it's a sole proprietorship, no, you do not have to do it. All right, we're going to get ready to take our first break. You can join the show if you want at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986, taking your calls. And we're also going to start talking about some unique holiday gift ideas for your clients. We have a company called Lolita Roasting offering some really cool, special, personalized coffee roasting just for your company. That's right. They will roast your own brand of coffee just for you to be able to then customize this and send it out to your clients. And it's a great way for you to have your own unique brand. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with the Dr. Friday Show. All righty, we are back here live in studio. You can join us live at 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. Let's talk about a few things you can take off your taxes, especially the entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs, did you know a self-employed individual may deduct 100% of their health insurance premium as an above-the-line deduction? It will not reduce your self-employment tax, but it will be a 100% deduction against ordinary income tax. So making sure that you have that kind of situation is always good. FAFSA, the permit to carry over unused amounts, that's the flex spending account that some people will have at work, or you may have your own individual. I'm more of a plan of the health savings account, but the flex spending account, you have to roll. You can only roll a portion. So we're getting out to the last quarter. If you have money in that account, you can roll over $640 that can be carried over into 2025. And for unused amounts in 23, the maximum amount you can carry over into 24 was $610 permitted to carry over. So into 2024, you had 610. They've upped that now for, so in 2024, to roll it over into 2025 is $640. So if you have more than that sitting in a flex savings account, you need to go spend it because you're going to lose it or have to pay tax on it. Either way, we don't want to do either of those if it's possible. So your best plan would be is to be able to take those and move that money into where you want it to go. Also, a lot of people start looking now at donations. I know I just actually cleaned my closet out. I got two big bags for charity. Remember that you can contribute up to $250 more, but you have to have proof that those donations are for more than that. So if you just have a big old bag and you're not itemizing it, you don't have an appraisal or anything like myself, you cannot deduct more than $250, even if you feel it's worth more than that. All right, let's go to Lenny in Brentwood. Hey, Lenny.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I've got a question. I'm self-employed. I have a business. I've been working all my life since I've been 14 years old. So I'm 66. I'll be 67. If I take Social Security, or can I take Social Security while I'm still actively employed and making, you know, good income?
Perfect answer. And I will tell you what, I am not, first caveat, I'm not a financial planner. I'm going to give you my two cents on it. You probably need to talk to someone that actually thinks a little bit more. My opinion is, yes, I mean, absolutely you can. As soon as you hit your full retirement, you can take your, I mean, you could always take it early, but there's limitations, right? But once you hit the full, they can't take back any of your Social Security. You're going to pay tax on up to 85% of whatever it is. So if they give you, you know, $10,000, you're going to pay tax on 8,500 of it. If you're making decent money, but who says you won't pay tax anyways? So just put that in the budget. So you might as well pull it in. Also, you know, you're also possibly now on Medicare. So you have to, you still have your own health insurance.
I do. Yeah. So you're saying to me, I got to ask you a question. You're saying that Social Security is taxable, even though.
Yes.
That's crazy.
I know, my friend. Trust me, it's one of my largest pet peeves in life. We paid tax going in, and now we're going to pay tax coming out. Only way it's not taxable is if you have no income, right? I mean, if you make $10,000 or less, then you wouldn't have to pay tax on. But you said you had a successful business. So I'm assuming this is just gravy on top of what you're already working and making a decent income. But some people say you can wait till 70 and you'll make 8% per year in growth. So it'll keep going up. But the problem with that in my family tree is we don't have longevity. We don't make it to 80 hardly in the last four generations. So it's like 85 before you even break even to doing something like that. So you'd have to know a little bit more about your family tree and stuff to actually make it worth it. And to me, I'd rather take my Social Security and leave more of my other retirement because people can inherit it than Social Security. If I leave it on the table, no one's going to get it besides the government. So that's my two cents on that one. But yeah. But Lenny, don't you at 65, didn't you have to sign up for Part B, or there's a penalty, isn't there?
I think there is, but I don't go to doctors. I don't.
Oh, you know, I hear you, my love. But you paid for Medicare already. I mean, it's not like something new. I mean, it's something you throughout your whole life when you worked, you've been paying into Medicare tax. So you might want to look into it. I mean, why not? I mean, you know, it's up to you. I mean, I'm not, again, not an insurance salesman, but theoretically, I think at 65, we're supposed to all register for it. And then at 67 or there between 66, 67, depending on your age, birth date, you can start taking your Social Security.
Okay. Well, that's the answer I wanted to hear. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for calling, Lenny. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you.
And that's a conversation we've all been having a lot of times. In meetings and things is when do people take, and I will tell you, financial planners have these algorithms and different things that they will use. Part of it is how long is your family tree? What's your, you know, what's the longevity? What's your expectation? I have clients that their parents have lived past 100. I mean, you know, so they have lots of longevity. And theoretically, if you're working and you're successfully doing, I mean, I hope to be working into my 80s, to be quite honest, if I can make it. If you're working and you're making money, taking your Social Security, let it grow by 8%, it's better than what you're going to get in the bank. So why not? But for many of us, personally speaking, I think take the Social Security, you can reinvest. I mean, some of us, we have SEPs and things like that. So we can theoretically turn that money back into retirement that would then not really make it so taxable. There are some games you can play like that. And then, you know, take it in, and then it's in your name, not the government giving it to you, but you've already paid for it. So just again, I am a firm advocate. The government has already taken it out. I've paid a lot of money into Social Security and Medicare. So when the time and the age and everything comes up, I will be the first in line to take it at the age, I think mine's 67 at this point. And so I will be the first one there saying, yep, it's time. I don't care what my income is. There's no reason not to take that. Now there will be Medicare is means tested. That's the reason I was trying to get Lenny, but he's obviously not worried about that side of things. But if you sign up for Medicare at 65, and I'm not an expert, it'd be interesting to find out, but what if I have my own health insurance? I think I have to sign up for it at age 65, or there's a penalty for not doing it, but yet they will charge me more money because my income is more than $108 or whatever you're allowed to have. And then they means test it for anything above that. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that all works because, you know, if I don't have to sign up for it and I can just keep to my own health insurance, I think personally speaking, I would rather that than signing up for Medicare. But I don't want to lose out because obviously, you know, you don't want to leave money on the table. So that'd be a question. Maybe I can get someone on here that can talk a little bit about Medicare. I know it's very confusing for a lot of my clients, and I have some great salespeople and reps that have been doing insurance sales as long as I've been doing taxes, and maybe we can get them to come back on and do a show and ask some questions. All right. So we, before the last break, and I want to go do this one again. If you are looking for a unique holiday gift for your clients, this is mainly for businesses, but also if you're having a wedding, a big family reunion, think about this. Lolita Roasters offers something special. It's a personalized coffee roast made just for your company. So they're going to put a bunch of testing questions and say about different things. And then they'll say, hey, this kind of coffee, maybe it's a dark roast, a light roast, maybe it's Colombian, maybe it's Irish, you know, all the different things. And they're going to make a custom roast that shows your clients that you went the extra mile, right? That you actually took the time and you're not just going and buying some cookies at a cookie place. You went the extra mile and made something memorable. Each holiday box includes your custom coffee and a thank you note, memorable and personal. It's a gift you won't forget. So this year, if you're looking for something that's just totally different, something that you're like, hey, my customers love coffee. My customers love coffee. It'll be something that we're actually doing. And that's why I got this idea. I'm like, wait, if I find this to be a totally cool idea, why not tell other people? Because it's kind of a small branch. So visit Lolita Roasters, Lolita Roasters.com. And you can get your order. You can get on there and start putting your form. There's going to be a bunch of questions they put you through, and they actually give you some sample roasts. So I think it's actually a really unique idea. So I thought I'd share it with you guys again, LolitaRoasters.com. And then just let them know that Dr. Friday referred you, and we'll see how that goes for you. And again, we're doing it ourselves. So I think it's a unique way of just celebrating the holidays instead of just the typical, we do a lot of the cookies or we do a lot of the different big brand stuff. This time I thought it'd be something just different. I like the idea. So if you have that, again, LolitaRoasters.com. So we're going to be coming back after this next break, and we're going to talk a little bit about more of the things. October 15th is almost here. We're going to be done with 2023. But at that point, we only have a few more months to look at 2024. And we've already talked a little bit about all of you that like to run out and buy new big vehicles and how that may change in 2024. If you've already done it, you may find out it may not be quite the tax advantage that you had in the past. And there's some pros and cons to that. So you're going to make sure that you understand what you have and if you need to think about that. And we're also going to keep talking about the BOIR, which again was the Business Owners Information Act, because if they're charging $500 a day and you haven't registered and done what you need to do on the website, then that's going to be a crazy amount of penalties just because you're going to say, I didn't know. And none of my listeners are going to be able to say that because I'm going to say I've been saying it for months now. So I want to make sure that you understand that that's really important. It's basically just something that the government is using to track foreign investors, but they don't know if you are or aren't until you sign up for this. All right. So when we get back from the break, we're going to take your phone calls, 615-737-9986. I am an enrolled agent licensed by the Internal Revenue Service to do taxes and representation. That's what I do. I've been doing it for almost 30 years here. And so if you have questions or you want to know how this is going to work, I'm your girl. You can also go on our website where we'll be opening up our calendar so you can start making your tax appointments. If you're already an existing client, you should have already had that opportunity. But if not, you'll be able to go in there, make sure you have that going on. We're going to be right back with the Dr. Friday Show. All righty, we are back here live in studio, and thank goodness we've got a few people. So we've got, looks like Mickey. Let's go with Mickey and see what I can help with. Hey, Mickey.
Got your Medicare question. So I just retired last year. My full age was 66 and a half. I kept working until January of this year. you do not have to sign up for Medicare as long as you have a qualified medical plan through your employer. Where the penalty comes in is if you don't have a plan and you wait, then they start charging you a penalty for however long you wait, and you're going to pay more of a premium each month and each year. But your employer will send you they have some kind of document they send you that says, hey, our plan meets all the specifications and qualifications of Medicare. You do not have to sign up for it until you quit your job.
Thank you very much. Seriously, it's not my expertise, and I know that I have two clients that I can think of that actually both have to pay that penalty, and I guess it's for the rest of their lives. So I'm always like, well, I don't think anyone told them that, you know?
Yeah, as long as you're working and your employer will send you a document that says, hey, this is a qualified plan and you're good to go.
Cool. Thank you very much for calling. Seriously, I appreciate
that. Welcome, sir.
Thanks, Mickey.
Have a great day. Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. And that's good to know because, again, most of us are kind of winging it sometimes. All right, let's hit Jim and see if I can help Jim. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Dr. Friday.
What can I do for you, sweetie?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. I'm about to be quit claim deeded a pretty valuable piece of property from a corporation that I helped put part of the property together. I helped them acquire this property and help them through the process and everything. And it was just, as part of my compensation, they're giving me part of the property. Now, I don't really want to keep this piece of property. I want to quit claiming into another piece of property that I own, that I want to buy, okay? I have been told by my CPA that I have to keep it for a certain amount of time before I can quit claiming. I mean, before I can 1031 it into another piece of property. And I've had other CPAs say, no, there's no law that says how long you have to keep it before you can 1031 it. What is your opinion?
Yeah, I've never heard, I mean, to be quite honest, I've never heard that there was a time. Now, once you've done a 1031 exchange, sure, you have to hold it for 2 years, I believe, before you can do something like redo another one or whatever. But I've never heard a quick claim. It's an interesting concept, but I've never heard of a quick claim that you couldn't turn into a 1031 exchange. I mean, obviously we're just delaying the taxes. So, I mean, eventually you'll have to pay the taxes or somebody will, if it's inherited or whatever. But, you know, I've never heard, I mean, it'd be something I would have to really look into. I've never had someone do it, to be honest, but I don't remember any tax law that says that there's a time period on a quick claim. There's only a time period of on a 1031, you can't turn around and buy a 1031 and then turn around and sell it and buy another one. There is rules on that one, but yeah, nothing as far as I know right off the top of my head that falls into that. So if you want, you can call my office, Jim, on Monday. I have a 1031 attorney I use when I do mine, and we can actually get the answer, or, you know, he'd be more than glad to help us.
I just want to make sure you understand. They're about to quit claim it to me this week, and I got another piece of property that I want to 1031 it into.
Now, you don't own the other property yet, do you?
No. I'm getting ready to quit. No. But okay. I've identified it, you know, and I'm going to put it under contract. And then when I get this property, I've already got it sold to someone else, but I'm going to take the money and put it in my attorney's thing.
Right.
And then
do the 1031. So basically, you've got a quick claim. Just to recap, Jim, you've got a quick claim that's going to happen sometime this week or thereabouts. And you've already got a new buyer for that property. So you're going to sell that property and do a 1031 into a piece of property that you've already identified, but you do not own right now.
Correct.
Okay, then, I mean, all of that is 100%. So the only question you have is, can you take a quick claim and immediately turn around, sell it, and make it into a 1031 exchange? I'm not an attorney, but from the tax code, I don't remember there being any limitations on a quick claim turning it into a 1031 that I remember.
Right. Okay. I'll call your office Monday.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get an attorney that handles that directly. He'll know the answer, okay?
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Bud.
Have a good day.
Sure. Thanks. It's an interesting situation. You don't hear too many times that kind of situation. So I always love something new in tax law and how it's going to work. All right. So if you want to join the show, you can 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986, the number here in the studio. And if you've got questions like that, I mean, sometimes, you know, obviously tax law is like the size of 10 King James Bibles. No one's going to know all of them, every law, but you know what? It's who you know and the people that specialize in each of these departments. So I would definitely suggest getting the expert. The attorney Notestein is who I always use, and he will be able to at least tell us if there's anything that would hold that up. I can't imagine why it would make any difference to the IRS if it was quick claimed and then turned into a 1031. Now the 1031 he's buying will have to be held for a number of years, but that's a whole different conversation. All right. So if you've got questions, you can join us here in the studio, 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. For all of you, had someone just did a quick text, says, what's a 1031? Sorry. A lot of times we just assume sometimes, and you guys, I mean, why did you assume you know tax law? It's not your thing. 1031 exchange is a like kind of exchange. So in instance that he's going to be receiving a piece of land or a house or dirt or whatever, let's call it real estate. And he can then turn around and instead of paying the taxes today, he can reinvest that money into something like kind, be another piece of real estate. And now the capital gains and all that he would normally have had to pay, because his basis in this original piece of land is zero, right? I mean, he has no basis because they're gifting him this piece of land for services that he did for them. So when he does that and then they convert it over, you know, at some point that's when it will turn into a taxable situation. There could be some gray area thinking out loud where if they're using this land as a way of not paying him for his time, there may be some gray area there, but I'm not his attorney or his accountant. So at this point, we'll be able to go. Let's hit Lisa in Franklin real quick before the break. Hey, Lisa.
Hi there.
What can I do for you?
I own a piece of property that has a business as well as a house on the property. There's about 1 acre that's dedicated to the business, and I'm fortunately in the process of divorcing, and he's going to quick claim deed me his portion. And what I want to be able to do is turn around and sell the business that's attached to the property. But I'm curious how the capital gains work if I make money off of selling that 1 acre and keep the other portion of the property. What kind of capital gains might I be looking at, or how does that work?
So, I mean, bottom line is you guys jointly own this property. I'm going to use some numbers, at least, that may not apply, but they'll be basic numbers. So let's say when you guys purchased this, you paid $100,000 for everything, because it sounds like it was all purchased at one time together. So
Correct. Whatever
that is, you're going to have to get a split so that you can actually get a basis for the 1 acre in the business compared to the house and whatever remaining acres might be tied to that. So you're going to have to take the original amount. Since he's quick claiming his share over, you would have 100% of the purchase, the original purchase price of this total property, whatever that was.
Right.
So I'm using 100,000. So let's just say that the business and the acres is worth 50% of whatever it was. So let's just say $50,000. And now you sell it for $500,000. You have $450,000 capital gains. I have no idea, at least, but you know the basic math here. So, you know, sounds good. But if you have two options, I mean, one, if you're getting it just so you can replenish the bank account, because divorce is never easy, then you're going to want to pay the capital gains, and you're probably going to need to sit down once you know those numbers, once we can figure out what roughly the basis for that 1 acre and the building is. And you guys have treated it as a rental, right? In the past? Is it on your guys' personal tax return as a rental property or no?
No, it's not.
Okay. I was just trying to find something that may have had depreciation schedule for you to work with. Nothing's ever that easy. Well, whatever that is, you're going to need to figure out what you can sell for, what our basis, and then we can calculate. Theoretically, it's up to almost 23.8% tax if it's a very successful, over 600,000 profit. If it's under, you're looking at between 15 and 18%.
Okay.
And so it's just a matter of how much we're looking at as far as the gain, because I don't know how long you've owned it. If it's, you know, you may have gotten a really good deal and now it's worth quite a bit, you know what I mean? Has a lot of appreciation in it. But anyhow, right, your first thing is to find out whatever. And when he quick claims it to you, in the perfect world, Lisa, I would have him quick claim it to you for the value, his share of whatever the value was originally. Not for zero. People love to put zero on quick claim.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? So if you, again, if you paid $100,000 for the whole thing, have him quick claim his share is $50,000 because you were married. So each 50-50 assuming. So you have his and then you already retained yours. Otherwise, and he wouldn't have to pay any tax because that's the basis he had. So it'd be zero for zero. I mean, in essence, $50,000 for $50,000, it wouldn't be any taxable implication to him. But that way you have something that shows what his share was and then the original documents hopefully showing what you had.
Okay, that's a very good idea. I hadn't thought about that. Thank you.
No problem. And then if you get the rest of the information, you can always give me a holler and I can always give you, not necessarily on the radio, but, you know, give you an idea of what to set aside for taxes, okay?
Thank you very much. Bless you.
Thanks for the phone call. Thanks, Lise.
Uh-huh. You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye. We're going to take our last break here. So if you want to join the show, now would be the time. 615-737-9986. 615-737-9986. We'll be right back with the Dr. Friday Show. All righty. We are back here live in studio. You can join us if you want, 615-737-9986, 615-737-9986. Something I talk to a lot of individuals, small business owners, my bread and butter, right? And one thing I don't hear a lot of, or it seems like they're not too sure how it works, is employing your children. I don't know about you, but my father had an accounting firm my entire life, probably why I went into it, as youngest of eight kids. And all of us worked with our father. I mean, we added up receipts. Some people entered information in big old binders because this was pre-Excel spreadsheets for a period of time. We would double check the math on tax returns. We had an assembly line. My father, you know, did taxes on the side. He worked as a chief financial officer. So we had, he always had a small bookkeeping firm, you know, raising eight children wasn't cheap. So all of us worked with our parents. And I'm not sure, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's the same nowadays. If you own a business, a lot of times you will take your kids with you to do it. And there's a big tax advantage for taking your teenage son or daughter to work. Wages paid to the children are fully deductible as a business expense for a sole proprietor, a partner in a partnership, a family-held partnership in which only you and your spouses are partners. You do not have to pay FICA, that's Social Security and Medicare, on wages if the child is under the age of 18, nor do you have to pay unemployment insurance for children under the age of 21. Child's wages may be subjected to a lower tax rate. Therefore, if you give them $12,000 a year, they're going to pay zero tax on the ordinary income. I've actually found it to be a great way for kids to start finding out how much it's costing for them to do their, let's say they have a sports, right? They're cheerleaders, they're baseball players, whatever. Bats are like $250. You pay them a fair wage. Now, keep in mind, you have to have a true job. These children have to work. They have to have hours. They have to be paid just as any other employee. You just don't have to withhold some of those taxes. But you have a job. You can't say, well, hey, I'm going to pay them $500 a month or something like that. They have to work. Then you turn around, you pay them, they put the money in the bank, and then they can then pay for their private lessons, their education, their whatever, out of the money that you're paying. Also, a Roth IRA is a great idea for that age. I'm not a financial planner. I am saying my personal opinion is if you have a child and you can put $6,000, $7,000 a year into a Roth, and it will grow even just from 15 to 21 while they're still working, or 15 to 18, that money, if they don't contribute anymore, that's going to grow throughout their lifetime, and it's a tax-free, it will grow tax-free, right? So these are great things you need to consider. Theoretically, in 2024, $14,600 would be zero zero tax, zero Social Security, zero Medicare. I had a family that came in and they have six children from the age of 12 to 18. And, you know, all of those kids are doing something within the firm. And the youngest is actually handling the QuickBooks, the accounting side. And then some of the other ones are going out and helping in the projects and things that they're doing. There's no reason you can't have this. You just have to treat it as a legitimate employee and a legitimate situation. You can't just say, well, I'm going to give Johnny $5,000 here. And, you know, he didn't do, because they have court cases after court cases where parents did that kind of thing. And then they disallowed the entire expense. That's a lot of money to be disallowed. So you want to make sure you do it right. Again, employing your children is a wonderful thing. And it teaches them, what does mom and dad really do? How hard is it to make a living? I mean, you know, what's the difference of you working for you versus going to work at the fast food joint? Now, some people will say they'd rather have their children working there because they don't want to have to deal with it. But a person that doesn't have children is advising you to employ your children. So you can take that. It's great tax advice. Set up properly. It is a wonderful way for you to be able to do things and for them to learn how to make money, how to spend money, how to invest money. And let's be honest, it's always better if you have that in your wheelhouse as we get older, because some of us, you know, to be quite honest, I didn't even know what the stock market was when I was younger. I mean, it wasn't something brought up and it wasn't something easy. But nowadays you can easily invest from your cell phone on a Charles Schwab account, and you can teach the next generation to be even more efficient with their money than what we were. All right. So the next thing was miles. I just want to cover that in 2024, it's 67 cents per a mile. That's business miles, right? And then if you're military, you will get 21 cents per mile for moving. Only people that qualify for moving expense are people in the military. We do not have it for anyone else. Medical expense is 21 cents and charity is 14. So if you work, maybe you do things at the church, you deliver things, you help out, when you're looking at your charitable contributions, add the miles. It's a great way of making sure that you have what you need and where you need to go. Another thing we have to talk about, a business. What is a business? Is a business just because you're out there and you're like, okay, well, you know what? Once or twice a year, I go out and I try to sell some art or something like that. And every year you've been heavy on your tax returns and you've lost money. You've spent more money every year in trying to be in business than if you are. The IRS is saying, wait a second, business losses, big old difference. You can have an NOL, you can carry your loss forward, but you have to do 3 out of 5 year thinking. So if I've lost money in the last 3 years, and this year, 2024, will be the fourth year, is it truly a business or is it a hobby in which you're trying to say, well, I was a real estate agent, but I didn't sell anything in 3 years? This is the fourth year and you still didn't sell anything? And but you have a real job, you have a W-2 job. And so, you know, the IRS is saying, no, you're not really trying to make it a job. It's a hobby. You may keep your license, you can do all that, but you can't write it off your taxes anymore. So you need to be able, and this is probably one of the hardest things in my world, because when I see tax returns, I mean, usually when you come in, we'll see 2-3 years in a row, and you see these losses every year, it's kind of obvious that you're using it for the purpose of a loss. The IRS is going to come back and bite you, and they're going to say, wait, we're disallowing all this. And there's a reason for that, because no one can afford to be in business for 3 years and lose $20,000, $30,000 a year, even $5,000 or $6,000 a year, depending on your income. Who wants to be in business for 3 years? Now, that being said, there are some farms that I have had a loss for 8-10 years, because farming, sometimes it takes them 8 years to even develop the first crop with certain plants and trees and different things like that. But normal business owners, we don't go in and we say, hey, we're going to sell this product, and for 3 years, we keep losing money. And then it turns into a situation where it's really not a viable business. So I just want to put that out there, because more of the cases we take on as an enrolled agent, many of the cases I take on is representation in front of the IRS. So you've got a love letter, they've come up with a problem and you don't agree with it. So we go in and we handle the audit, which is fine. But sometimes, let's be honest, you knew you were pushing it. Maybe you've listened to me for the last 14, 15 years on the radio, or the tax person that you had just kind of put numbers on a tax return. They didn't have this conversation with you. It's important to have those conversations. It looks great. You got a refund. Everyone's happy until the IRS comes back and questions it. Now, sometimes you'll get letters. I got a client that got a letter today. They get a letter and says, hey, we're changing your 2022 tax return. But everything on that 22 tax return was already on the 22. So just because you've gotten a letter that says things are changing doesn't mean the IRS is correct. What it means is you need to evaluate what the situation is. How can we deal with it? Is there a problem? And what do we need to do to make it, you know, in a sense, go away, right? What do we need to do? So, you know, if everything, like in this particular case, they'll send you a change. We think we need to change your tax return. Do you really think you need to change it or not? And if they do, then we need to deal with it. All right. Looks like the show is winding up. You can reach us at 615-367-0819, 615-367-0819. You can always email Friday@drfriday.com. Again, Friday@drfriday.com. And if you have no idea who I am and you just were driving in your car, it's rainy, and you turn the radio on, you're like, hey, who is this person? You can always check me out on the web. It's just drfriday.com, drfriday.com. Easy. And that way, drive safely. You can always remember it. It pretty much rhymes. And then you can always contact us if you've got questions. Try to contact us before you go do something, because afterwards it's very hard to correct anything. So if you're going to sell something, you're going to do something like that, you need to know the information before it happens. Try not to wait till after, and then we're really just telling you what the taxes are. There's not a lot that we can do to help you out. We hope that you guys are enjoying this extremely rainy weekend, but it's been a good Saturday. I appreciate all the phone calls, and I think that when you need help, you just need to pick up the phone, 615-367-0819, 615-367-0819. Call you later.